When should I start?
Whenever you're ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Pharmacology Weekly. I'm your host, Michael. In today's episode, I will be interviewing the primary researchers, Dr. Zhu and Dr. Li, whose study involved the identification of small molecules that could be used to treat Zika virus infections. For those who don't know, the Zika virus is a mosquito-borne flavivirus that originated in Africa and has spread to the Western world. In 2017, at the height of the Zika virus epidemic, over 120 million people were at risk of contracting it in Brazil alone. Now, let's get into the questions. Dr. Zhu, aside from the fact that the Zika virus was once considered an epidemic, why was it so important to develop novel drugs to treat those infected with it?
The active transmission of it was reported in 60 countries and territories worldwide in late 2014, so it was a bit of an emergency situation, especially with the symptoms that it was associated with. 20% of those infected with the virus showed symptoms that resembled that of dengue virus. However, it additionally caused congenital defects like microcephaly if pregnant women were infected and passed it on to their kids. And in adults, it was associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome, meningoencephalitis, and myelitis, all of which are pretty serious and potentially life-threatening.
Dr. Li, drug repurposing is a novel approach to finding new drugs to bring to the market. Can you describe this method of drug discovery and why it was used in this case?
Yes, of course. So drug repurposing is when drug libraries are scanned anew for existing drugs that can be repurposed and marketed for another clinical indication. In this case, we were screening for existing drugs for antiviral activity and caspase 3 inhibition. We chose to scan drug libraries rather than create a novel drug because it is cost-effective and time-efficient. Most of these drugs have already been analyzed in vitro and in animal models, so many aspects of these drugs are already known. This saves us a lot of time because we know a little bit about its general mechanism and safety. Therefore, money is saved and so is time since a lot of the experiments were already conducted. Now it's just a matter of seeing if these drugs are useful for our indications.
Dr. Zhu, when it comes to viruses, our main objective is to prevent infections, which is usually what vaccines are for. Why do you believe that the focus has turned away from vaccines in the case of the Zika virus?
It is true that the prevention of a disease is the best cure, but that was not feasible in this situation, at least yet. Vaccines, just like developing new drugs from scratch, take quite a long time to make and cost a lot of money compared to drug repurposing. Drug repurposing would allow us to make safe and effective drugs readily available in an emergency situation like this one. Also, the Zika virus is a virus that may mutate, so developing a vaccine will be very tricky to try and accommodate its variants, consequently causing even more time and money. The best solution was to treat it and to try and prevent any serious symptoms from progressing.
Dr. Li, while reading your research, I realized that 3D brain organoids were used for your in vitro studies. I have never heard of these myself. Why were they used when there are 2D models at your disposal?
Another fantastic question. Although it may have been simpler to use 2D models, we decided to experiment on 3D brain organoids because they better represent embryonic brain development. And therefore, it gives us a better insight on how Zika virus strains will influence a neonate's human neural progenitor cells. Since Zika virus gravely affects neonates, we thought it important to focus on these models.
Back to Dr. Zhu. Was there any reason behind the choice of assays that you used for these in vitro studies? As I read that there was a great debate between the both of you as to whether you had to use cell viability or caspase 3 assays. Could you describe the so-called hits that would result from their use?
From the in vitro studies on 3D brain organoids, we realized that the Zika virus infection of human neuroprogenital cells results in an increase in caspase-3 activation, then produces cell death. So we decided to use a compound screening approach with caspase-3 activity as the primary screening assay. The secondary screening assay was then the cell viability assay for confirmation. So the caspase-3 assay would tell us if the cells get infected or not while using the drug. Then the cell viability assay would tell us if the cells are protected from death or not with the use of the drug after infection. This would help us identify which drugs are effective antivirals and neuroprotective against the Zika virus. The drugs that are identified as effective from those assays are called HITs.
So, Dr. Lee, during the caspase-3 inhibition assay, your results led to the identification of a pan-caspase inhibitor known as emricasan. Why did this specific drug catch your eye?
The reason behind our focus on emricasan is that it demonstrated potent inhibitory effects in the caspase-3 activity assay. This implies that it is effective in inhibiting caspase-3 activity in various Zika virus strains. It's important to note that emricasan didn't affect human neural progenitor cell proliferation, which is good because it tells us that it has neuroprotective activity towards human neural progenitor cells. Although emricasan did not show any anti-Zika virus activity, which is why it was important to screen for inhibition of viral replication.
Dr. Zhu, after determining that emricasan was insufficient, as Dr. Lee just explained, you sought after antiviral compounds and identified niclosamide and PHA-690-509 as the two potential treatment options. Why were these compounds chosen and not the other cyclin-dependent kinase inhibitors investigated? How would you say that they performed?
Emricasan by itself can protect cells from dying, but it cannot contain the ZikV infection. So we were seeking antiviral compounds to complement emricasan sufficiently. Niclosamide, which was initially a drug approved to treat worm infections, and PHA-690-509, which is a cyclin-dependent kinase inhibitor, were both found to inhibit the replication of all three strains of the Zika virus that were being tested in a dose-dependent manner. Both of those drugs effectively inhibited the ZikV infection before and after inoculation with the virus. Of course, other cyclin-dependent kinase inhibitors were investigated as well. However, the ones that did have an effect had a very minimal one compared to the ones that we thought were hits.
Dr. Lee, our final question. You both mentioned that antiviral drugs and caspase-3 inhibitors are safe and effective when used in combination. Therefore, you tested two possible combinations. Can you tell us which way you believe was best?
Of course. Just to reiterate, we first tested giving these two drug categories in combination, as in at the same time. Specifically, we looked at giving emricasan and PHA-690-509 and saw that there was an additive effect in inhibiting caspase-3 activity. We also saw an additive effect in the preservation of astrocyte viability. Also, there was no interference with PHA-690-509's ability to inhibit viral replication. The second way in which we tested giving both compounds was sequentially, giving emricasan for 72 hours and then giving niclosamide for 48 hours. This led to the recovery of human neural progenitor cells, which means there's this benefit of buying time, as one could say. By inhibiting apoptosis of these cells by initial treatment with emricasan, the cells are given enough time to recover.
Thank you, ladies. That wraps up this week's episode of Pharmacology Weekly, where we learned about how drug repurposing and high-throughput screening can allow us to treat diseases on a much faster and more cost-effective timeline. And this is how novel treatments for the Zika virus are on their way. Now, a big thank you to all of our listeners. Please tune in next week for another interview of the researchers involved in a study that screened for insulin-dependent pathways that modulate glucose homeostasis. Thank you.